This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Game two of the ALCS would require 355 pitches. What? 355 pitches. How many of them did you watch? It also required 15 total pitches. No. Pitchers throwing those 355 pitches. Oh, dear. This could get complicated. Everything that you could possibly want and then some in a baseball game. Pressure-packed. Yankees already up 1-0 on the road at Minute Maid Park, forcing extra innings. Justin Verlander long gone. James Paxton long gone. Aroldis Chapman long gone. CeCe Sabathia, well, he was only there for a batter anyway. Roberto Osuna long gone. My goodness, we went 2+ hours in between hits. And yet, it was good to the last drop and worth the wait.
First pitch, and Correa lines it deep to right field. Judge is going back at the wall, looking up. See you later! See you later! See you later! See you later! Astros even the series at a game apiece on the walk-off home run by Carlos Correa in the bottom of the 11th. 3-2, Astros win it!
A mob scene at home plate for Correa as he stops on home plate for an exclamation point.
It's a great game. This is a beautiful game, the game of baseball. Two teams, two of the best teams out there competing to win ball games. I mean, it doesn't get any better. So pretty special to compete. JB did a great job. Our bullpen was nasty. Gave us a chance to win the game.
Carlos Correa in the immediate aftermath of his walk-off home run in the bottom of the 11th. And he mentions JV, Justin Verlander. He mentions the bullpen. Both bullpens were pretty nasty, actually. A lot of bullpen moves that we'll get into. But the final three of those 355 pitches, woo! A lot of drama packed into those three. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. It was a jam-packed weekend in sports. From college football to the NFL Week 6 to the ALCS to the NLCS to the first human being ever to run a marathon in under 2 hours. That's absolute insanity. We're going to jam it as much as we possibly can after what was an awesome weekend. I hope that you enjoyed yours. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. So those final three pitches of the ALCS Game 2. By the way, every time a pitch was thrown for the final 2 hours of this game, I could feel my stomach muscles tighten. Oh, the stress. I have no rooting interest, absolutely none. And yet it was stressful for me. I forgot how stressful October was, and yet awesome. So here's the situation. Top of the 11th. The Yankees had runners on in extra innings. Top of the 11th. They're threatening again. And A.J. Hinch goes to his bullpen and Josh James. Josh James has one responsibility. You have one job. Josh James has one job. He needs to face Gary Sanchez. He needs to face Gary Sanchez with two runners on base and two outs in a tie game in the top of the 11th. Seriously. the drama. And so Josh James takes on Gary Sanchez and gets what is an 0-2 count really quickly. And then it turns into a battle. By the way, both those first two strikes were on foul balls. Gary Sanchez fouled off 7 pitches from Josh James. The 9th foul ball, I'm using my air quotations, actually wasn't a foul ball. But Sanchez duped the home plate umpire. He swung at a ball that was in the dirt and yelled, "Foul tip, foul tip." And the umpire, that's not a reviewable play. The umpire couldn't see it clearly and said, "Okay, the count remains the same." It was a 1-2 count for what felt like forever. So on the very next pitch, it was a bit outside, but a called strike 3. A 10-pitch at-bat for Josh James to retire Gary Sanchez. So you have the fake foul tip, the called strike 3, and then the very next pitch is Jay Happ to Carlos Correa, bottom of the 11th, and boom, it was over just like that. And so the Yankees have stolen away home field advantage, but multiple times came close to getting a 2-0 lead in the ALCS and couldn't do it. We're going to have post-game reaction, of course, from Houston, but the Astros win in walk-off fashion, 3-2. Here's something that is fascinating to me as well. I mentioned it was 2 hours without a hit. Well, in the 6th inning, after George Springer had tied the game with his home run in the bottom of the 5th, in the top of the 6th, the Yankees get runners on base. They're threatening again. DJ LeMahieu leads off against Justin Verlander with a single. And then Gleyber Torres reaches on an infield single to third, and LeMahieu is safe at second. After Edwin Encarnacion flies out, there's 2 outs, but 2 runners on. You have 36-year-old Justin Verlander facing 36-year-old Brett Gardner. The old guys rock. I love it. I love that we've got some grizzled veterans making such a major impact in this series and also in the NLCS. Now, remember, this is 2 hours before the walk-off home run by Carlos Correa. But Brett Gardner facing Justin Verlander. Again, 2 runners on in the top of the 6th.
Verlander set the 3-2. Breaking ball line to Altuve on a hop. He can't play it. Gets off of him. Around third and coming home. LeMahieu throw to the plate in time. Correa throwing home after the ball hit off of Altuve, hit off of his chest and went to his right. Correa, the Johnny on the spot, and threw it home to get the out and end the inning.
And so Carlos Correa throws out DJ LeMahieu trying to score at home in the top of the 6th inning. He has the defense. He recovers a ball that bounces hard off Jose Altuve. It probably should have been an error, but Brett Gardner was awarded a single. An infield single. I mean, essentially, this hard ground ball eats up Altuve at second. Correa comes from the other side of second base, fields the ball, sees LeMahieu running home, has the alertness and the wherewithal to throw the ball home, a perfect strike, and LeMahieu is tagged out at the dish. That was top of the 6th. So his defense saved a run, and then he has the walk-off. Kind of a bookend. Nearly a 5-hour game. Oh my gosh. Poor Rob Manfred. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Now, Aaron Boone made a lot of moves in this game. A lot of pitching moves. James Paxton's only in there into the 3rd inning. Then essentially serving as an opener. Then it's Chad Green, who was perfect for 2 innings. But then it's Adam Ottavino, who gives up the home run to George Springer. Quickly, it's Tommy Kahnle. Then it's Zach Britton. Then it's Chapman. Then it's Sabathia. It's on and on and on. He made a ton of moves in the bullpen. And so he was asked about those after the Astros finally ended the game.
You're playing it to win the game. So, you know, you're not playing it to, you know, what if we go 13? You know, you're playing it to what gives us the best chance to win here. And, you know, the bottom line is, you know, we end up, you know, giving up a third run in the 11th inning. And, you know, I'd say from a run prevention standpoint, it went pretty well.
He makes a good point. How do you question the moves when there still wasn't another hit or run until they got to the 11th inning? But man, it was a chess match. Ultimately, it's a 1-1 tie in the ALCS. Pretty incredible game. I hope you enjoyed it. Love to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. At one point, I don't even remember when it was. I think it was the 9th inning. I had pulled up in my car and parked outside the CBS Sports Radio building, but I couldn't get out of my car because I was worried in the 3 to 4 minutes it takes me to get in the building, up the elevator, the elevators are so slow, and into our studios that I would miss something. And so I'm sitting in my car, I can't move. And then thankfully, Aaron Boone makes another pitching change. Even more grateful am I for the 832 pitching changes, or what it felt like in this game. 355 pitches. That is, well, that's nutso, but also just add to the drama. And so Yankees and Astros, they're tied. Not so much in the NLCS. St. Louis Cardinals drop both their games at home. They only muster 4 hits in 2 games because the pitching has been absolutely incredible for the Nationals. Do you know the Washington Nationals have won 14 of their last 16 games? Now remember, they've had one of the best records in baseball going back to late May. But because of the hole that they put themselves in to start out, 19-31, that number's been quoted over and over and over again. They were 19-31. They had to climb out of a hole. They had to face 3 elimination games on their way to the NLCS. And then Anibal Sanchez takes the ball in the opener in St. Louis on Friday night and has a no-hit bid into the 8th. Max Scherzer follows suit and doesn't allow a hit into the 7th on Saturday. The Cardinals don't even score a run until the 8th of Game 2. And there's some timely hitting mixed in there, of course, for the Nationals. We've seen that for a long time. Even though they did leave a ton of runners on base, especially in game number 1. But Yan Gomes, Howie Kendrick again, Adam Eaton with a big 2-run double in game 2. And so here are the Nationals heading home to D.C. for game number 3 and 4 in their own friendly confines. And they already have a 2-0 lead. Again, consider where they were and what they have survived to get to this point now where they have the upper hand in the National League Championship Series.
It's kind of nice going back up 2-0 in the series, but, you know, those guys are really good over there. I mean, the series is far from over. We got a day off tomorrow. We're going to spend the night, get a good rest, and work out tomorrow.
Obviously, David Martinez speaking following game number 2. So they had the off day on Sunday, and we will get game 3 on Monday. Steven Strasburg, Jack Flaherty. Not sure what more you could ask for from the NLCS with the pitching matchups, the pitching that we have seen. And then, of course, the ALCS is now knotted at 1 game apiece. So some good baseball over the past few days. We also have to dive into football, obvi. Hashtag Captain Obvious. There's so much to talk about from the NFL weekend, and it's hard to even know where to start. But we typically start with Sunday night football and work our way backwards. Some phenomenal storylines playing out. Sam Darnold returns. The Steelers win without their first or second quarterback. We also have back-to-back wins for the Arizona Cardinals. Are they rounding into form now offensively in the first year with Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray? How about that Niners defense again? Back-to-back weeks now, stifling their opponents, and this time it was a battle inside the NFC West. Deshaun Watson, Pat Mahomes on the same field at Arrowhead Stadium. Absolutely jam-packed weekend. And so I'm trying to keep it all straight in my brain. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, we can talk it out. Let's flesh it out. Thanks so much for being part of our first show of the work week. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Second and 10 at the 21-yard line. Single back is Gordon with Rivers under center along the left hash. Drops to throw, swing pass Gordon over his head. That's behind the line. The ball is loose, scooped up by the Steelers. It's picked up by Devin Bush, who dives into the end zone for a touchdown. Hodges gets the shotgun snap, gives it to Connor, sweeps the left side, got a block at the 10. Connor to the 5, Connor to the goal line, and in for the touchdown. James Connor sweeping the left side, takes it in from 12 yards out, and a 13-0 lead for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's in the gun as well with two receivers to the left side. Single wide right is Johnny Holton. Connor to his right as Hodges will throw to Connor out of the backfield. Makes a man miss and it's at the 20. Connor down the sideline to the 10 and he's going to walk it in for the touchdown. Second and 10 at the 1. Rivers heaves it down the left sideline. That one's intercepted. Cameron Sutton with a pick at the 30. Down the sideline to the 20. At the 15. Inside the 10 and down at the 8. Sutton seals the deal with an interception of Philip Rivers.
It's a football feeding frenzy. After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It was the first career start for Steelers third string quarterback Devlin Hodges and James Conner, his BFF. What a victory for the Steelers. What a start for the Steelers. And then the defense late to preserve this victory in Los Angeles, though it seemed more like they were in Pittsburgh. That was your Sunday night football game. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Kevin Kugler with the calls on Westwood One. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, or you can peruse our Facebook page. This was a start for Devlin Hodges. It was a huge game for rookie Devin Bush. He actually set the tone early. He scoops up an incomplete backward pass by Philip Rivers for a 9-yard touchdown and an interception on a tip pass the very next drive. So in the first quarter, he's got essentially a fumble return for a TD and then an interception off Philip Rivers. So that was Devin Bush. Remember, the Steelers traded up to get him in last spring's draft. And then it was James Conner in the first half, rushing for a TD, catching a pass from Hodges, able to set the tone and give the Steelers a 21-0 lead at half. In fact, they were still up 24-0 going into the fourth quarter. Then you saw the signs of life from the Chargers offense. They scraped together 17 points. But Cameron Sutton with the interception off Philip Rivers in the final 45 seconds to be able to seal it. So the Steelers move to 2-4. The Chargers drop to 2-4. It's amazing how the same record can look and feel so different, right? Why don't we start with Philip Rivers, the home quarterback? They come up with 17 points in that fourth quarter, but they fall short.
Not good enough. I mean, similar to how we had to try to rebound from last week. We've had now two poor performances in a row offensively and slow starts, and it's cost us in both of them. We got going, and it's just too late, especially today. And we just got to keep going. I mean, we can sit here and overanalyze it and talk about what all happened, but it's not going to change it. We just got to keep going.
I thought they controlled the ground game both ways. We have to do a better job of running the football, and we have to stop the team from running the football on us. It was disappointing, but like I said, I believe in these young men. I believe we have enough to get it done, and I believe we will.
Anthony Lynn there following Philip Rivers. And coach is right. they get dominated on the line of scrimmage. And not only were the Steelers able to establish the run, but there were a lot of times when Phillip Rivers was either rushed or wasn't making smart throws, got sacked only once, but had a couple of interceptions in there, also did lose a fumble. And so he wasn't necessarily under siege, but there was a lot of pressure. So officially just the one sack, but six quarterback hits. The secondary played well in this one. So it's exactly what the Steelers would have needed. And you can imagine that they were pumped up a little bit by the number of fans who made the trip or who showed up there in Los Angeles. Instead of post-game press conference in some conference room somewhere, that's kind of boring, right? So not 2019, Devlin Hodges with a post-game selfie video on the field.
Hey, Sunday Night Football, big win. Man, shout out to Steeler Nation. I don't know if this was a away game or home game. Y'all are incredible. Bye week next week. Man, I'm just so proud of the guys. Big win. Let's go.
It's always nicer to go into a bye when you have a victory. 15 of 20 for Hodges, 132 yards passing, a touchdown and a pick. But again, the run game, James Conner, the ball control, that was really the story of this one. Get up early and then hang on for dear life. Mike Tomlin, I mean, he's happy, but you just might not hear that happy.
Man, that's a big win for us on the road in a very fragile state. It's good to go into the bye on a good note and gathering ourselves a little bit. We need it because we got a lot of injuries. We had a few tonight.
I just don't know if you're going to hear any other NFL head coach say anything about a fragile state. But I love Mike Tomlin for it. And he's right. It's good to go into a bye with a win. A win is a win is a win is a win, even if it's with your third string quarterback on the road and you're only 2-4. But again, it's crazy how different 2-4 can feel to different franchises. The Chargers had very lofty expectations coming into this season. Remember last year, it wasn't until the final week that they fell short of the AFC West title. They win a road game in Baltimore on wild card weekend. And then, of course, lose to the Patriots divisional weekend. But this was supposed to be the next step for them. And it's not about Melvin Gordon holding out. Really, their defense has been kind of porous, unable to stop the run. But also, I kind of am still scratching my head about this team. I really don't have a lot of ways to explain the Chargers. It's just these untimely mistakes, worst possible minutes, really disjointed, and there's plenty of blame to go around. So the Chargers and the Broncos are at 2-4, basement of the AFC West. Broncos have actually won back-to-back games, so they are, again, another example of how 2-4 can look and feel so different to two different clubs. As for the AFC North and the Pittsburgh Steelers, well, they've got the same record as the Cleveland Browns. We will, of course, get to the Browns game against the Seahawks, which feels like hours ago. Oh, my gosh. So much has happened. You know what? I have a cramp in my right hand. I'm right-handed. And I write in cursive still. I write out all my notes by hand. I started taking notes 12 hours ago, and the only time I stopped, really, was one time to make lunch. And I worked all the way through dinner, and then when I was driving. But then I was gripping the steering wheel. So my right hand is a little bit loopy right now. I feel like as though I'm going to cramp up. Similar to, I think it was George Springer who said he cramped up in this second game of the ALCS on Sunday night. All right, find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Coming up next, that San Francisco 49ers defense is legit. Too legit to quit. I know, it's old, but the 90s are back, you know. So again, it's on Twitter, Facebook. You can weigh in on what was an incredible weekend in sports or 855-212-4227. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Third down and a foot. Garoppolo talking to the umpire saying, put the ball down. He's got a quarterback sneak it. He got hit, and then he pushed forward. He's right on the goal line. No indication yet. Is he in or not? Touchdown! Touchdown! San Francisco! Here's the handoff to Henderson. He'll dive, and he should have the first down.
Oh, it's going
to
be close.
Let's see where they spot him.
That's going to be all about the spot right there.
Robert Saleh's jumping around like they got it, like it stopped him. I thought Henderson had enough on the dive, but he's a little guy.
The offense is walking on the field.
Rams may not have this. 49ers have stopped him again.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
Yes, in fact, the 49ers stopped them again and again and again. And again, what a performance by the Niners defense in Los Angeles. Greg Papa with the call on the San Francisco 49ers radio network. And Kyle Shanahan, Jimmy Garoppolo, John Lynch, Robert Saleh, defensive coordinator. My new favorite character to watch on the sidelines in the NFL. They, as a group, have moved to 5-0. That front defensive line, incredible what they did against the Rams offense on Sunday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I'm going to give you the down and dirty numbers because they're pretty incredible, worthy of a Niners nerd alert. But first, I got to tell you, our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. So how about these? These numbers they're stifling. They're stingy. They're nasty, physical, and aggressive. Sometimes numbers don't tell the story, but these do for the Niners defense. Again, this is in Los Angeles. The Niners allowed just 10 first downs to the Rams and only 157 total yards. LA goes 0 for 13 on third and fourth downs. So essentially, when they had to have a first down, they couldn't generate it. 0 for 13 on third and fourth downs. A career low 78 yards passing for Jared Goff. That's it. A fumble, 4 sacks, and as you can imagine, San Francisco dominates the time of possession. Now, they only had 99 yards rushing, and so they didn't do it the same way they did against the Cleveland Browns, where they just ran roughshod up and down the field all over the Browns. But because the defense kept taking the ball away from LA and giving it back to the Niners offense, they were able to dominate that time of possession. I think it was roughly 40 minutes to 20, something along those lines. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo, not perfect, had a couple of turnovers. But the Rams never scored after their opening possession. They marched right through that San Francisco defense. All they did was run the ball. So they never asked Jared Goff to do anything but hand off on that initial drive. And remember, this is without Todd Gurley, who missed this game with injury. Niners took it personally on defense. And didn't give it up another point, but also responded with a pair of goal line stands. So there was one late second quarter and another midway through the fourth quarter. Demoralizing. You score in the opening drive, and then you essentially get nothing the rest of the way. Believe it or not, this is the first 3-game skid under Rams head coach Sean McVay.
We're not going to let it demoralize us. That's a good football team. They did a nice job. We didn't do enough collectively, and we'll all look inwardly, and we'll figure out how to be better moving forward.
It's not the end of the road, but it is stunning to see this from the team that represented the NFC in the Super Bowl a year ago. And this is a divisional game, remember? So the Niners are at 5-0. The Seahawks are 5-1, and we'll get to that. Both of them playing great football right now. The Rams fall to 3-3. The Cardinals, meanwhile, are breathing down their necks. Arizona now at 2-3 after back-to-back wins. So, yeah, from year to year, you never know what's going to happen in the NFL. What we do know is that the San Francisco 49ers are 5-0 for the first time since 1990.
It's always good to be undefeated. You know, it's hard to win games in this league. So whenever you get the opportunity to go out there and win, I mean, we've been taking advantage of it. So it's just, we got to keep this thing going. You know, it's a good start, like I said, but we got a long way to go.
Some really formidable defenses in the NFL. But now having seen the Niners back-to-back weeks make their opponents look inept. I mean, they gave up 3 points to the Cleveland Browns on Monday Night Football. Then they turn around in a short week and they give up 7 to the Rams. Garoppolo doesn't even need to be perfect. It's kind of a weird theme going on here, right? The Patriots' defense is really setting the tone for New England. Brady, of course, has had some great stretches because he's Tom Brady. But the offense has also struggled at times. In fact, the last 2 weeks, they've started out really slowly. But defense and special teams, they continue to generate points and give Brady and the offense, it's got lots of injuries to its receivers, and you know the drill. The Patriots played on Thursday night. But they're 6-0 primarily because of the D. Well, the Niners had a game in which, if I'm not mistaken, they turned the ball over 4 or 5 times and still won because the defense is an eraser. Defense is like the stopper, the term that we use in baseball. And so it's pretty amazing to see these two teams now, the only undefeateds remaining, 6-0 and 5-0. The Niners already had their bye. And we have just 2 winless teams remaining in the NFL. Only the Dolphins are 0-5, the Bengals 0-6. And so 2 more teams getting their first wins in week number 6. Gosh, there's so much to get to. Yet another quarterback change. And so we hadn't had a quarterback change since, well, a new team making a quarterback change. Obviously, in week 5, the Steelers had to go to a different quarterback they didn't expect. But it was Tennessee making a quarterback change, joining the ranks on Sunday. We're going to get to Texans and Chiefs just after the top of the hour because that was some kind of battle for Deshaun Watson and the Texans defense. It wasn't just about Deshaun Watson because they had 3 turnovers at Arrowhead. And yet the Chiefs have dropped back-to-back games in their own stadium for the first time since 2015. So it's kind of odd, right? Here we are a month and a half into the season, and you've got teams that are going the wrong way. Teams that were expected potentially to be challengers for division titles. People get ahead of themselves. They start predicting Super Bowls in August. I think that's dumb, but people do it anyway. The Chiefs have dropped back-to-back games. The Cowboys, they've lost 3 in a row. I don't think anybody wants to win the NFC East. The New York Jets, though, they get their starting quarterback on the field again. So good for Sam Darnold to return. He'd been itching. In fact, he thought he was going to be on the field against the Eagles a week ago. And then at the last second, doctors were still concerned about his spleen. So he called it a flak jacket. He was in protective gear. And I mean some heavy protective gear on Sunday against the Cowboys.
Darnold, play action, drops the throw, steps up, floats a bomb up the right seam, looking for Anderson. He's got it at the 50, at the 40. They're not going to catch him. He's going to go the distance. 10, 5, touchdown. Sam Darnold dials it up to Robbie Anderson. 92 yards, and the Jets have widened their lead. Darnold in the shotgun. Takes the snap, looks right, pops one right, caught at the goal line by Griffin. Reaches it across the goal line. He's in for a Jet touchdown. Ryan Griffin with his first touchdown as a Jet. And the second touchdown pass thrown by Sam Darnold.
Pretty incredible atmosphere at MetLife Stadium to welcome back Sam Darnold. First start since the season opener. He throws a couple of touchdowns. He does have an interception in there, but they started off hot. He right away engineers an 8-minute, 14-play drive in the first quarter. Le'Veon Bell caps that one with a 2-yard touchdown run. And then after the Jets defense, which definitely looked energized by the return of Darnold and maybe some balance with the offense, after the Jets D keeps Dallas out of the end zone from the 7-yard line, then Darnold, boom, right over the top, 92 yards to Robbie Anderson. And here, a couple of those touchdowns with the Jets offense on their radio network with Bob Wischusen. Now, the Cowboys were able to generate a pair of fourth quarter drives. Now, this is without Amari Cooper, who left in the first half with a quad injury. Dak Prescott has a rushing touchdown with 43 seconds left. The Cowboys trail by two. So, of course, they have to go for two.
Prescott back in the gun, throws it in the end zone, incomplete, and there are no flags anywhere. And he was bowled over. They knocked Prescott on his backside before literally he had a chance to throw. They brought a blitzer up the middle who was unaccounted for, Jamal Adams, and that ball never had a chance. And the Cowboys are going to come up short by 2 points.
To win it the way we had to win it, whereas they scored a touchdown, we had to stop a two-point conversion. You know, the offense had to drive down the field, answer to a score, and get, you know, we got three, we converted the field goal. Just like all the little things that had to happen in the fourth quarter. I think that's the way we had to win. That our guys needed that.
Again, the defense looked energized to me because now they've got Sam Darnold back, a guy who can stretch the field, a guy who can open up the offense, a guy who can actually lead the offense to first downs and extend drives. Now the defense knows they're not just out there taking snaps and pouring in blood, sweat, and tears and still more than likely going to come up with an L. No, having their starting quarterback return to the field was a lift for the entire Jets locker room. And you could see it on the field against the Cowboys. As for Dallas, that's three straight losses now. Dak's numbers weren't terrible. But early on, they could do nada. Against that Jets defense, they weren't able to get any traction early. And do you remember a week ago against the Green Bay Packers, they were trailing by, was it 17 at the half? And they put themselves in a huge hole again against the New York Jets. It's hard to climb out of a hole like that. And so, yeah, you have a great fourth quarter and you make it somewhat respectable. But when the highlight of the first half is a Brett Maher 62-yard field goal, there's a problem. The Cowboys can't keep getting embarrassed in the first half. So trailing by 17 points at the break against Green Bay on their own field a week ago, and then down, well, giving up 21 points, down 21-6 at the half against the Jets, a team that had not won. Now, That winless mark, deceptive, because they didn't have Sam Darnold. They're a different team with Darnold on the field. But the Cowboys can't keep shooting themselves in the foot and expecting to win. And they're not winning right now. At 3-3, they've fallen back into a first place tie, quote unquote, with the Eagles. They've lost their lead in the NFC East. All right, Texans Chiefs after the top of the hour. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.